kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Talkie Box followed me. Yay.
Nice.
I don't know who that is. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am Joe. Joining me as usual, CJ. CJ, how you doing?
I'm doing fiddly-diddly-tastic.
Wonderful.
I gotta create something new. I do it every week. I don't, actually, but if I did...
You don't have to.
But, I mean, if I didn't, who would?
True. You're the only thing left. hello to everybody hanging out in the chat today. This isn't going to be too long of a show. We have an interview coming later in the show with Eduardo Jimenez of Eclipse Games to talk about Spheroids, which we just reviewed on the last episode. And on the last episode, I said that the interview was on our last episode, and I was wrong. It's on this episode.
What's even funnier about that is the fact that you say we talk about Spheroids. We barely talked about Spheroids at all.
True. Well, hey, we did cover Spheroids for the PS4 a while back anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, who cares? We had fun. Yeah. Isn't that all that matters?
Yeah, but that interview's coming up later on this episode after, you know, all the shenanigans and whatnot. I'm happy that I can actually record this right now because I've been having a brutal time with internets lately.
Yeah, I saw your angry tweets about it.
Oh my God, I was so pissed. Yesterday, while this is going to be a shock to everybody, but by the time this episode is out, it's been a few days because we record things in advance. This is not live, by the way. Shocking to everybody.
Well, it is, actually, if you're on Beam or Twitch.
Yeah, if you're on Beam or Twitch right now, it is live. But if you're listening to an MP3 of this or it's on YouTube, we're not live. There's a chance we're not even alive. A lot could have happened in the past couple days.
Well, if they're listening to it on YouTube, then you probably are, because otherwise you wouldn't have been able to upload it.
It depends on how long after the fact they're listening.
I mean, I guess... Thanks for listening 3 years in advance. I want you to comment.
Yeah.
2020, you better be listening.
But I normally try to get episodes up on Fridays for the, you know, the main weekly episodes, and then Monday or Tuesday for whatever else is going on. Friday kind of fell apart because my computer was acting like butt. So I decided, you know what? Instead of releasing it at like 1-2 in the morning Friday night, I'll just wait until Saturday during the day and I'll release it then. You know, people might actually see it then. So I got everything done. I started the upload, and as soon as I started the upload, my internet died.
Ugh.
I was like, probably just need to like unplug the modem and router for a couple of minutes and plug it back in. So I did that. Everything was working again for about 5 minutes. And it happened again. In the span of about 2 hours, I was probably cursing while offline for an hour and 40 minutes of that.
That sucks.
And it got to the point where I just, you know, I factory reset the router. I factory reset the modem. I redid like the activation with Comcast, and just shit was not working. It kept fucking up on us. I didn't know if it was my modem or the router. Thinking, hey, maybe it's the router, and thinking ahead, it's like, hey, when we bought this, we bought the 2-year warranty. It expired 3 days before.
Oh, yeah, I saw that tweet. Dude, that was the...
Fucking timing. Ouch. Timing there.
Well, they build those things exactly to last right after their warranty ends.
But Ashley and I went up to Comcast today to return our modem. The only thing that they have now is like a wireless gateway modem combined big ass unit that's like the size of an Xbox One.
Wow, really?
It's not tiny, I'll say that, but maybe it's not as big as an Xbox One. But
I was gonna say that's a really big router.
It's probably bigger than a Wii U.
A Okay, I could buy that. The Wii U's not actually that big.
Like the actual system, not yeah. the tablet.
But, yeah.
We were hesitant to go with that because we've had that wireless gateway thing twice in the past. The first time we had it, the router that was with it was garbage. Like, we couldn't get anything at all.
Yeah.
So we decided, you know what, let's switch. They had just a standard modem that, hey, we'll go with that instead and use our own router. Because our own router was fine, clearly, because we just bought the fucking thing. And it worked fine for a while. And then in the past few months, things have just been kind of getting crappy with our internet. You know, things would get slow a lot of times. The internet connection would just drop here and there. And so we were like, all right, I guess we should probably upgrade because we got these warnings that, like, they upgraded the lines in our area. And, you know, if you want the best connection, you got to upgrade to the newest equipment, blah, 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 blah. But,
yeah. Their line of bullshit.
So we got the wireless gateway router modem combo thingy, and it would just drop internet for, I don't know, 5 seconds or so every now and then.
Yeah, that's annoying. I think I actually have that problem with my router.
And
my
modem. I think it's actually happened on the show a few times because I would go back and listen to things and someone would be talking and then it would just go away for a few seconds. Then it would come back. It was never enough to, like, completely ruin a show, but it was noticeable, and it was irritating, because it's not like, oh, my connection died, let me just, you know, unplug everything or reset the router or whatever. It would drop for literally 4 or 5 seconds and then come back, and it drove me crazy.
That right now, my modem, because we upgraded internet to a 50 meg from a different service provider, and now it sucks. It feels slower. The upload actually is slower.
Wow.
Even though we upgraded double the speed, we had Time Warner at 24 megs a second, but we were getting a six megabyte upload. With Windstream, we have 50 meg download and 4.5 meg upload.
Weird.
That's so stupid.
I don't know. But so far, we were trying the wireless gateway thing again. So far, so good. It's been most of the day with no issues, so fingers crossed we stick with no issues. The worst part about changing modems or routers or anything else is having to rename the Wi-Fi info and then go back through all your devices and update it.
Yep.
Oh my god, what a fucking headache.
You should get you a... What I was going to say is I was surprised you just didn't buy your own modem.
And I see Ricky Kiki Taco in the chat is saying it's really cheaper to buy your own modem and router, but I don't know. Maybe one day I should.
Yeah, then you don't got to deal with that problem. The only downside to it is if it starts to go bad, like, they're not going to really do anything.
Yeah, at least the way it is now, we might pay the extra couple of bucks a month, but if something gets fucked up, they got to deal with it.
Yeah.
We just have to drive out of town and take the thing with us. We don't have to worry about running to a store, keeping paperwork, hoping that they have something in stock.
I mean, there's ups and downs to both.
Yeah. But anyway, only other news I could think of to talk about this episode is, have you been keeping track of that Humble Freedom Bundle going on?
Sort of. I saw it when it first popped up, and it had like a shit ton of games, but I don't
this
think I've
kept... might be the craziest game bundle I have ever seen released. For the people who don't know what it is, unless you're listening to us on Beam or Twitch, you're too late, because as of when we're recording this, there's only 16 hours left to get it. The bundle costs $30, which might seem high for a Humble bundle. Usually it's like, oh yeah, I just got to pay $8 and I get, you know, 6 games or 10 games or whatever.
Sometimes even cheaper than that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But this one is $30. The big difference is that all of the money goes to charity. It's not like split it up between Humble and, you know, the developers. Like, everything here is 100% to charity. And you could choose in between an International Rescue Committee, Doctors Without Borders, or this is good for America right now, the American Civil Liberties Union, because America's kind of fucked right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I went with my full $30 going to the ACLU, and there is a ridiculous amount of games included here for $30. First off, like, the first thing on the list is The Witness, where that game is still $30 by itself.
And you can get it Steam or DRM free.
Yeah. You know, and then there's so many more games like Stardew Valley, Day of the Tentacle Remastered, Nuclear Throne, Octodad, Invisible Inc., Super Meat Boy, if we're talking about Danny B. from last episode, Stanley Parable, Super Brothers, Super Hexagon, VVVVVVV, Guacamelee, two versions of Guacamelee, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's... I wonder if I could count all these, all the games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 27, 32, 37, 41, 46, 50,
and the last one's out of order.
55, 59 games. For $30.
And
if you were one of the first 100,000 people to get into it, you got Subnautica as well. But that one actually sold out.
Yeah, there's not any more keys left for that game.
Yeah. How many times does it happen that there's a bundle that has a game completely sell out?
I don't think I've never had that issue where, like, a bundle, I couldn't get one game because the bundle was out of.
There's
some other great highlights as well. Like Tower of Guns is one of my favorite indie FPSs of all time.
Yeah,
Song of the Deep.
Oh, Song of the Deep was fantastic.
Ninja
I love that
Pizza Girl. Cube, Director's Cut, Jump Jet Rex.
Yeah, I mean, hell yeah, Jump Jet Rex.
Rav.
Shuchimi.
Rocket Birds, Hard Boiled Chicken.
That's a good game, actually.
I have it, actually, yeah.
The System Shock 1 and 2. Like, what the fuck? Double Fine Adventure? Like, the full movie? The full 13-part documentary? God, it is insane how much stuff is included in there. Like, just ridiculous. Yeah. Ricoculous, as some would say. But yeah,
it's insane.
I think the fact that Subnautica sold out goes to show that I don't think Humble was expecting the response they got.
No, they didn't, because their goal was fucking 300,000 and they got 6,182,000.
Yeah. Their goal was $300,000, and they were going to match it for $300,000, which translates to, what, 10,000 bundles sold? And then I'm guessing in the case of Subnautica, they're like, you know what? We're probably going to hit that target. So instead of just requesting like 10,000 keys for a game, let's plan ahead. And they got like 100,000 keys for Subnautica, which, first of all, that's insanely generous of all the developers to donate games to include minimum of 100,000 keys like Subnautica.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, they're not getting anything for it. Like,
yeah.
They're just zero
money. This is 100% of the money goes to charity. But the fact that they planned for 100,000 keys with 16 hours left to go, there are 193,000 bundles sold. So this could break 200,000 in the next half a day.
Even Super Meat Boy is also out of Steam keys, but the game's DRM free if you want.
It's just...
That's insane.
Insane. And it blows my mind that not only are there so many generous developers who were a part of this, but there were so many people out there who either saw, hey, there's a shitload of games I could get here for really cheap, or they're like, wow, I could donate to charity and get something cool for it. Because there's also books included, there's music included, audiobooks, like... comic file. It is insane, the amount of stuff that is in this bundle.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I'm kind of excited to see how far it goes in the next half a day.
I'm assuming you definitely got that, considering you gave me a key to Jump Jet Rex.
Yes, I have been giving out keys like crazy to people. Like people on my Steam friends list or people on Facebook.
Yeah, you just sent me what was it, Stanley Parable and that, because both were on my wish list.
Yeah.
So he just sent them to me.
Yeah. I still have a handful of games left that I have to unload. I don't know if, like, who still needs stuff. And some stuff from Bundle Stars as well, because they have a big weekly bundle celebration thing going on. But, man, just insane how much stuff. So, massive shout-out to everybody who was involved with that Humble Bundle, the Humble Freedom Bundle. Again, if you missed out on that, you're an idiot.
Well, or you didn't have money.
Or you're poor, you know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lean that more people who skipped out are leaning towards the idiot side.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of people that simply don't know that
true.
Humble Bundle even exists. Like, they're like, how the hell did you get so many games?
I still love like the that. People who are like, oh, I was gonna buy it, but Subnautica sold out, so now it's not worth it. Fuck you, it's not worth it. It's not worth it?
Yeah.
Over,
I mean, I definitely would have wanted that
for $30 bucks is not worth it because one game sold out.
The Witness or even, like, Stardew Valley alone really is like
$15, so that's half of it right there.
It's really
good. Jesus, Octodad, Invisible Ink, World of Goo, No Time to Explain. That just if you legitimately look at this line up and say, it's not worth $30. Go fuck yourself.
Well, the people that say that are the people that don't have any concept of how much work actually goes into indie games.
It blows my mind that some people could say, because one game sold out, it's not worth it.
I think at that point, they're just mad because they missed out on a game, yeah. So now they're being petty.
Oh, there's so much pettiness. They're like, oh, well, if I would have known that it was limited, I would have got it earlier. Why didn't you just fucking get it when you saw it instead of being like, let me see what gets added? Your greed cost you.
Yeah.
So I saw it launch and I'm like, I need $30 for this right now.
And it's their loss.
And I got it pretty much immediately because I knew it was worth it. And then since then, like, another 20 games were added from when it first launched.
Yeah, I know you offered me a few games that I was like, I don't own them on Steam, but I already owned them on Xbox, so I was like, nah.
Yeah.
Just because I'm the kind of person that I don't take a game unless, you know, I don't own it anywhere.
People are like that every fucking month with Games with Gold when I look on Major Nelson's Twitter.
Oh, dude. Oh, God. I stopped looking at comments on, like, TA about Games with Gold because they infuriate me how much people just shit on him when it's like, it's free games. You paid the same amount of money before Games with Gold was added to the gold bonus, so it's free.
Yeah, people are like, this is what bugs me about people comparing Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus. Games with, like, Xbox Live Gold was never a free game service, ever. It started off as this is how you play online. Free games were an added benefit. Like, that was an extra something. And it was only supposed to be, like, a timed thing, too. They were like, oh, for the rest of the year, we're going to give you free games. And then it was so popular that they're like, we should probably keep doing this. People like this. So, yeah. What started off as two free games is now up to four free games. All four games each month are playable on Xbox One. And again, this was an added benefit.
Like, even, like, I don't even complain about Gates of Gold. Even if they don't suit me, it's like,
yeah,
there's still, I would still have Xbox Live Gold, even if, in fact, I did have Xbox Live Gold before Games with Gold was a thing.
Yeah, I've been a Gold member for, God, going on 10 years now, something like that.
Didn't Games with Gold start in, like, 2013?
I don't know. I've been a Gold member since I got my Xbox 360, which was not even, maybe 5-6 months after launch, something like that.
I got my 360 in, like, 2011, and I got Games with Gold, or I got the Gold membership pretty much right away, because I loved being able to play online. That was the whole point.
But then the comparisons that bug me with PlayStation Plus is that people seem to forget PlayStation Plus started off is a quote-unquote game rental service. The whole point of PlayStation Plus was to get a handful of games for free every month that you got to keep as long as you're a subscriber. That was the point.
They didn't have any other bonuses.
They removed value by forcing online play in with PlayStation Plus. So now it's not an optional thing anymore. Like, Xbox Gold, for the most part, was never optional.
Unless you didn't care about online playing, you had to have Gold.
But for the most part, Gold was always a fairly mandatory kind of item to have. And Microsoft was never shy about that, where PlayStation was like, oh, you shouldn't need to pay to play online. And all the fanboys are like, eh, you shouldn't need to pay to play online.
I'm surprised that, honestly, that does surprise me a little bit that Xbox sold so much better than PlayStation 3 did at that time, considering you had to pay online.
Yeah. And people like to compare, oh my god, Pork, what are you doing behind my monitor?
Trying to knock it over so that it falls on top of
pretty much. He if you could see the video right now, like, he's moved the camera so much and the monitor so much that it's like completely shifted. Oh my god.
Actually, I have it paused. Oh my god, that is such a huge jump, because I had it paused at the beginning of the stream, so it was locked onto your face and now it's the whole way over there.
Oh, dickhead cat. Stay out from behind there. Lay down, you little dick. But, yeah, to me, Xbox did it right by adding value to Xbox Live Gold, where Sony took away value from PlayStation Plus. And since then, they've increased the price and the quality of games has gone downhill drastically. I mean, there's some months where, you know, everyone can agree, you know, PlayStation has the better game lineup for the month, or, you know, there's Xbox has a subpar lineup for the month. But for the most part, ever since the price increase, or even since PlayStation 4 and the mandatory PlayStation Plus, the game quality has just gone downhill.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I don't know. It's stupid.
There's definitely some games that I wish were over on Xbox's side, but for the most part, there's a lot of them that are like, what the fuck even is that?
I don't know. Ricky's saying that always found PlayStation's lineup to be really great. I think some months they have good lineups, but there's many months that I think they're not that good.
And you gotta remember, Joe does have a PlayStation 4 as well. In fact, he's had 7 PlayStation 4s. So he doesn't hate the system.
I mean, especially when you look back to when it was basically, you know, 6 PS3 games every month. Or there were times when it wasn't just, you know, a handful of PS3. They would release games every week instead of 1 month. And, you know, instead of getting X number of games, sometimes they'd be like, hey, fuck it, here's the entire Resident Evil PS1 lineup as a free bonus, because why not? I mean, you could still see the value in PlayStation Plus today, but compared to the games you used to get with PlayStation Plus, it is severely downhill.
The only thing I was really jealous about was I really did wish that Xbox would have gotten that This War of Mine, because I wound up actually paying the $9 for it while it was on sale on Xbox, but it was free for PlayStation. Yeah. Just because I wanted to play that.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I mean, I still did it, but it was like, wish that was a bonus for us.
I guess the main point of everything is that people bitch about everything and nobody's happy about anything. Including us sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely complained about some games with the Golden Pass. Be like, why?
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I don't know. I get games across 3 systems. Yeah, every month you get stuff for Vita, PS3, and PS4. And I love the months where you get a bunch of stuff for the PS4 because it's cross-buy. But still, look at the game quality and the game lineup compared to 2, 3, 4 years ago with PlayStation Plus. It is significantly worse. you could still think that they have good lineups every month. Those things don't have to be mutually exclusive. You could still have a good lineup every month and still be significantly worse than you used to be. I mean, you could be both things at once. You could be good and disappointing at the same time. That's our show. We're good, but we are still disappointing every episode.
I forgot about this month's lineup. PlayStation 4 definitely wiped Xbox out this month. I will say that for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Little Big Planet, Not a Hero, and Starwall all just, yeah.
Oh, yeah. When we talked about it on the show, I said, you know, very clear that Sony won the month. Easily.
Yeah, this month, yes, easily.
Yeah, there's definitely months where Sony just knocks it out of the park. And then there's months where you just look at the lineup and you're like, why? Even as a Vita owner, like the months that they would give you a PSP game just felt like a kick in the dick. Oh. Anyway, we have a couple of reviews that we should probably get to, huh?
Yeah, this episode's already gone a little bit longer than I thought it would because of the rants.
Let's kick things off with Ride 2, developed and published by Milestone, but distributed in the U.S. by Square Enix, which is pretty neat. Released October 7th of last year in Europe, February 14th in the U.S. on Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99. Discover, transform, and test out the fastest and most iconic motorbikes in the world's largest digital garage on more than 30 tracks, including the legendary Nürburgring, which I probably said
Nürburgring. It doesn't sound right.
Nürburgring. Well, it's foreign. What do you expect? More than 170 bikes, new models and categories like the legendary Two Strokes for real fans, the Supermoto with their ad hoc physics, and Cafe Runners or Cafe Racers with their retro style. This is, as you would expect, the sequel to the original Ride that was released a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. What the hell is that noise?
That was my chair.
Oh, sure.
It was, actually. It was my chair.
I wasn't a huge fan of the original Ride, mainly because of the controls. I think part of that was due to the fact that I've spent so much time playing, like, normal racing games, quote-unquote, with cars and, like, ATVs, that you need to remember that a street bike is not going to handle the same as a car in Forza or even, like, motocross bikes. So once you realize that you need to, you know, turning in the game is going to be significantly different. You're not going to drift a street bike.
Yeah.
If you try drifting a street bike, you're going to slide out and fall off the bike, which has happened to me a number of times in the game so far.
Bikes are considerably different than cars in racing games.
Just a little. Yeah, it is standard, you know, world tour progression with various difficulty classes and bike classes that you choose between. The bikes be upgraded and enhanced with all different kinds of bike, you know, brakes and engines and rotors and pretty much the whole kit and caboodle. Very in-depth bike customization, I guess, and upgrading. So if you enjoy the garage stuff in the Forza games, you're going to enjoy it in Ride 2. It's incredibly deep. There are also tons and tons of options in regards to the difficulty, whether you want to go with a more arcade-style racer or a more sim-style, very similar to, again, Forza, which is my point of comparison for everything racing anymore. But, you know, the more assists that you remove, the more bonuses, credit bonuses you get at the end of races, which, you know, you use those credits to buy new bikes or upgrade your bikes or whatever else. When it comes to the upgrades, I kind of wish there was some form of auto upgrade feature like in Forza, instead of manually going to every category and every part.
Really?
And comparing.
I always do it like that in Forza.
Do you?
That's how I like to do it. I go through and pick which ones I want.
Yeah, but sometimes you just want to be like, give me the most powerful shit I could afford right now. let me get on with it.
Some things are just pointless, though. and just a waste of money. I mean, I guess at a certain point in Forza, you have so much credits that it doesn't matter, but still.
Difficulty-wise, the game seems to be, you know, I have it on an easier setting just because I'm still trying to get accustomed to the controls with the game.
That's why.
And I just want, I like racing games where I just beat everybody all the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to struggle. I just want to win. All I do is win,
way.
win, no matter what.
Yep. I'm always like that in racing games.
But even still, if you're not careful with how you're handling turns and how you're, you know, accelerating and taking turns, you could easily fuck yourself up really bad. You can take a turn too fast and you could slide out. You could be going up an incline and accelerate too much and pop a wheelie and fall backwards. You could come into a turn too fast and end up running into other bikers and flipping off your bike. When you wreck in this game, it's not just, oh, I bumped into another car. Oopsie, let me continue driving. It's a bike, so you could fly off the bike.
Sounds like that's hilarious.
Sometimes it is. The one race, I took a turn too tight, and I slid off the bike, and I was on the ground, and all the other bikes just ran me over.
Jeez. They don't care about you at all.
I wish I could have remembered. I didn't remember to record that because I wanted to save that as a highlight of just like, hey, I wiped out. Now look at a dozen other bikes run me over.
I hate that. I have forgotten about that feature just completely now. I never use it anymore because I just forget that it's a thing.
I
would love to be able to do that.
I don't remember why I didn't do it.
Is there a replay feature like in the game?
Not that I saw.
Oh. That sucks.
Something that legitimately sucks with the game is some of the loading times.
Okay, how rough is it?
The first time I went through it, it was so bad that I was like, next time I need to leave the game to, you know, if I want to check a game installation or look at the store, I'm going to completely close the game and I'm going to time it. Because when you start it up, yeah, you know, there's the splash screen, which I don't include because, you know, every game has a splash screen.
Yeah.
There's a tiny loading thing, and then there's like the licenses of like, you know, scale, form, or whatever the fuck types of fonts and engines and whatever else. And then they have like an intro video and then like another loading thing, and then there's like a press start, you know, press menu
button. Yeah,
that's where
you count it.
No, normally you would because it would immediately go to a main menu. This game, to get to that menu screen, like press menu to proceed, was like, I don't know, 20, 30 seconds. Nothing too horrible.
No, but okay, that's okay. That's standable.
And again, I mashed the A button to get through those little video graphics of like, here's, you know, a cutscene. I skipped all that crap. And it was about 25, 30 seconds before it was the press menu. So you push the button. And then it goes to a loading screen that just says Ride 2, and it's a picture of a road, and there's a loading icon on it. 2 minutes and 20 seconds before it got to the main menu.
Okay, that's ridiculous. Okay, that is absurd.
That's from me hitting the menu button to start. That loading screen, that single loading screen, was over 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah, that's... Okay, question. Are there loading screens that are really bad once you get into it? Because that's the qualifier.
There can be some, but a number of them are significantly quicker of just, like, you know, going into this, loading up the race. It was surprising, given how long that initial load time was, once you select your bike and start the race, it was significantly quicker than I expected.
My thought is that there's a lot of loading up and preloading, all that extra stuff, so that
it's
it loads
possible,
faster once it's
but
in
that
the game.
Initial load time is brutal.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. It's just like, okay, and now I'm going to go make toast.
Dude, that's that. When people ask me about my worst loading times, I always think of Morrowind on the original Xbox. Because
how bad was that? Because I know that you said Sword Coast Legends, I believe, was also really rough.
It was, but nothing beats Morrowind. because I would hit start. There was one time I hit start. I waited. I realized it was going to be a bit. I put my controller down, got up, went in the kitchen, got bread out, went to the fridge, got mayonnaise, ham, cheese, went back, made a sandwich, put everything away, sat back down, and it was still loading.
Oh, that's like a 3 or 4 minutes right there.
I think there were legitimate 5 minute load times in that game.
That's pretty rough, but that's a much older game too, yeah. So it's a little more excusable.
Yeah, but when people ask me about load times, I immediately think of Morrowind.
I can't think of a game that's like specifically like, holy shit, I remember how long these load times were. Like, I know I've played some games that were brutal, but
yeah,
I don't think it's ever been like Gascos's Extreme was like a 60-second loading screen.
Yeah, but that the initial load in Ride 2 is it's a harsh one. I hope that they look into finding ways to improve that, but the fact that the game was released back in October originally and just came out now, if there's any improvements to be made, I think they would have been made already. So I don't know what the story is there.
Yeah, maybe they improved it from 5 minutes.
Maybe. something I enjoyed is your default character. There's not much in the way of like character customization. It's fairly generic, but you know, you're in a racing suit the entire time, so customizing your face isn't very important. But his default name was Miles Stone, which I thought was like such a generic action star name.
So it does sound like something you'd see in like a shitty Miles Stone.
So I renamed him Brick Hardcock instead.
I'm glad that you can name him Cock. I'm glad you can put those kind of words in it.
Milestone, hi, my name's Brick. Brick Hardcock. Meet my cousin, Dick Fingerblast.
And my sister, Smash Cunt.
I don't think that one will work too well.
I hope so. No, maybe. You should try it.
Overall, the game is really solid. As much as I didn't really enjoy the first ride, it seems that they have improved upon the original game in pretty much every way, which I am happy about. The loading times are an issue, and then the price is another issue, releasing at $60, despite the fact that it released in October in Europe. At $60, I can only give it a try. It. If you are more interested in the game, I would suggest looking at like Amazon UK and trying to import it. Right now, it's £30, which translates to about $40 American. Carnage saying, really solid as Brick Hardcock. My sister, Hammer Cunt the Brave. Oh man, I like you too. You're fun. But yeah, I am significantly impressed with how much better Ride 2 is compared to the first one. But between the load times and the higher price, despite the fairly long wait that we've had for the game to come to America, the best I could do is a try it.
I was actually really surprised when you just said that price. I legitimately thought that it released at $39.99.
Yeah, I think if it did release at $39.99, it would be a lot harder or a lot easier to swallow the price. Or if they did like what they have on Steam, where they have like a deluxe edition that includes the DLC. As it stands, they have a few free bike packs that are included that you can, well, not included, but you could download for free, clearly, because they're free bike packs.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to pay for free bike packs. That'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a solid game. Just remember, it is not Forza.
So yeah, well, there's not many games that can be Forza.
Just keep in mind that the bikes handle differently, and that's the important thing. But
yeah,
that was long. Next one to talk about, let's move on, is called Guts and Glory, developed by Hackjack Productions, published by Tiny Build. Released February 16th on Steam Early Access for $9.99, a game about father and son riding their bicycle through obstacle courses of death and other fun family experiences. So, CJ, tell us about Guts and Glory.
Well, Guts and Glory is pretty much just a 3D Happy Wheels You have the choice of three vehicles: a bicycle with a kid with your kid on the back, Earl who rides an ATV, or the Yang family in their car. The goal is to avoid obstacles to beat each track. The gameplay is fun but frustrating, which is very much like Happy Wheels. The physics are odd and a little unpredictable, but that's what can make the game a lot of fun or make it extremely aggravating, depending on if you actually want to beat each track or if you just want to watch the hilarious deaths that your characters have when they get blown up by a mine or shot by a cannonball or caught by a swinging spike or have a flying saw blade cut them in half. It's always fun to watch. For the most part, I didn't take this game very seriously, which makes my opinion on this game much higher. This game is not one that's meant to be realistic in any way, but instead meant to be a challenging yet slightly stupid experience. And when I say stupid, I don't mean it in the negative way.
I think when you see the words tiny build, you need to, you know, throw reality out the window.
Pretty much. Just like Cluster Truck. It's just insane. The only thing that I legitimately got on my nerves was the way that no matter what character I was playing, there was always a slight force turning me left. I consistently had to readjust while I was on the bike, which wasn't a big deal because you can't go that fast. But with Earl on the ATV, it was actually very annoying because it is completely noticeable and you will get killed quite a bit. I'm not sure if it was a compatibility issue with the controller, which I was using a wired Xbox 360 controller, but... I was getting dragged to the left constantly and having to
say you don't have any kind of controller drift, do you?
Nope, my controller works perfectly fine. I was just using it last night.
Well, some games they have different dead zones than others, so you never know.
I'm thinking because I saw some stuff about Xbox 360 controller on like their update page. They had updated it to support Xbox 360 controllers, but they didn't have any way to like test them. Because they didn't have some
Desert Bus ATV edition. Oh, fucking Desert Bus. Okay, go ahead.
I don't get it.
You don't know what Desert Bus is.
I can't say that I do.
You piece of shit. All right, finish the review.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this.
The tracks are fun, and even while most are in the same environment, they still have unique layouts and fun obstacles. And aside from the built-in tracks, there is also a track creator, which allows you to make your own map and upload it to the Steam Workshop, or you can just go to the Steam Workshop and find other players' created maps and play them. The difficulty in this version seems more forgiving. I watched quite a bit of footage of the game in the past from some of my favorite YouTubers, and while playing the tracks myself, some have way more checkpoints to respawn at than they did in the past, which is good. I'm happy with that. The music is really weird. Some songs fit the tracks while others don't. I'm not sure if it perhaps plays a random song with each track or if this song is actually tied to the track. Overall, it was a fun early access experience, and I'd recommend buying it if you enjoy Happy Wheels and other ridiculous games that aren't meant to be taken seriously. It's just a fun little game that's weird.
Nice. Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. So, for $9.99 in early access, seems like something crazy and fun to check out.
You're being a dick in chat.
I'm the dick. You don't know what Desert Bus is.
Nope.
Oh, my God.
I mean, maybe I do, and I'm just it's not ringing.
Desert Bus is part of a Penn and Teller Smoke and Mirrors game that was in development for Sega CD and I want to say the Panasonic 3DO possibly.
Well, I can confirm that I legitimately don't know what it is now. I didn't just forget.
Well, it was meant to be a collection of like absurd mini games that, you know, would break the fourth wall or stuff like that. And one of the mini games was Desert Bus, which kind of took on a life of its own. Especially when an ISO of the game leaked out online and has like since been embraced by the world at large. There's been a mobile port of it. There is a fundraising drive yearly that's like Desert Bus for Hope, where they take donations, and as long as they keep getting donations, they keep playing the game, which, you know, it doesn't sound horrible. Oh, we just have to play a game. The point of Desert Bus is that you need to drive from, what is it, Reno to Las Vegas in real time.
Oh, okay. So that would take forever.
In a bus that goes 45 miles an hour.
Wow. I can imagine that coming onto Xbox and that being achievement to make it the whole way there.
The thing is, you know, it's just a straight road because it's a desert road. But to make it more difficult, your bus constantly pulls to the right.
Okay, that's where the connection comes.
Yes.
Okay,
and if for some reason you run off the road, you get towed back to the start.
Oh my god.
In real time.
That sounds so brutal.
The bright side is, once you get all the way to Vegas, you are rewarded with a point.
Point. Wow. That's rough.
The game is amazing.
This sounds not amazing, but okay.
It is amazing in a way in the absurd Penn and Teller mindset, I guess. I'm trying to remember like what Desert Bus for Hope, if they have a list of like what their highest run was. Like the highest point total before someone fucked up. But yeah, they've been doing fundraisers for years, and 2007 was their first one, and they raised $22,000 in a week.
Not bad.
In 2015, which is their last update that they have in their FAQ, $683,000.
That sounds like the worst time ever. I wouldn't want to be a part of that.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, that's a fun story, and now I get the reference.
Yeah. Desert Bus is amazing. And there's been talk of like a remake, a remaster or something.
Yeah, that would be funny.
So who knows? Desert Bus. Fucking Desert Bus. There's an achievement in Roundabout for doing Desert Limo 8 hours without pausing, by the way. Crash the limo and it's over. Holy shit. I did not know about that.
That sounds awful.
Drive the entire classic length of Desert Limo without crashing. First off, to unlock this minigame, you need to first beat the story. Objectives don't matter. You just need to get to the credits. After that, select challenges. The classic length is 8 hours. So you must stop the car from veering off the road for 8 hours straight. There is no way to pause it.
The even more brutal part is the fact that it's 51 gamer score.
Oh, that is incredible.
So in order to fix your gamer score, you have to do it.
That is incredible. Roundabout might be like my new favorite game now.
Just because of that.
The fact that they include that.
At least it's only 8 hours.
The one that throws it off is called It's Tuesday. Stand still for a minute of silence at the memorial, which is 79 points.
Yeah, that's...
Oh my god. How did I not know about that Desert Limo?
Well, now I guess you gotta go. That's what you should stream tomorrow or whatever.
Oh god.
Just do Desert Limo. Limo.
Looking at the people who've accomplished it, the first person, Memories of Final.
Yeah, of course. You know.
Also on the list, Carnage.
Yeah. Well, that's why he knew about it.
Carnage, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you do that to yourself?
I'm disappointed that Shiz doesn't have it.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called I.O., which, by the way, is incredibly hard to find information on when you don't have a link for it. Just do a Google search for I.O.
Yeah, I know. I tried.
Yeah.
I wanted to look up the game to see what it was. Like,
developed and published by Gameus. Released February 14th on Xbox One, Windows 10, PS4, and Vita for $7.99. I.O. is a physics platformer in which you control a ball. By growing or shrinking, you can influence its speed and weight. Use these mechanics to gain momentum and make your way through the levels. Toy with the laws of physics, solve the puzzles, and reach the exit as quickly as possible. Can you win the gold medal in all levels?
Can you?
Did you? Can you?
Well, did you?
I did not know. This one was covered for us by our good friend Jake Benlier, who takes pride in destroying difficult games like this. And this is his review. He writes in saying, IO is a very simplistic 2D puzzle platformer. Let me burp up that KFC I had earlier. The player controls a two-dimensional ball and must navigate through obstacles to reach the green portal, which ends the stage. Although simple in design, IO adds an interesting mechanic to the table, the ability to shrink and grow your ball. The levels are designed in a way that requires you to utilize the shrink-grow mechanic to traverse obstacles and complete the stage. For example, in one section, there will deliberately be a small passage which requires you to shrink down to pass through it, and then immediately after the tunnel will be a bottomless pit which requires you to grow in size so you don't fall down to your death. A further example is rolling down a slope. If your ball is small, you will not roll that fast, but if you increase your size, you'll be heavier and therefore roll faster. You must always keep this in mind when you play a level. The size of your ball will affect how fast you roll, how fast or slow you'll glide through the air. Oh, man.
Getting really stuffed up there, man.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Making you sad? Sounds like I'm about to cry.
I don't know. I think it's the weather. It was freaking 60-plus degrees today.
That's insane, considering, like, what, 2 days ago it was fucking freezing.
It's February. So I think it's just messing with my sinuses. Anyway, what is interesting about IO is there is no story to follow. Therefore, you have the ability to select any of the levels in the game from the start. So if you're unable to complete the level you're on, you could just move ahead. With that said, there are 225 levels in the game, 235 if you include the 10 tutorial levels. You may think that rolling a ball to a green portal may sound a bit boring considering there are 225 levels, but as you progress, IO adds numerous new mechanics to add to the gameplay. New objects such as yellow blocks are movable when touched, blue blocks automatically move, red blocks kill the player if they touch it. Other elements like pink teleporters and wind, which can throw the player off course, are also present in later levels, which can prove to be tricky. IO also offers a medal-based system based on how fast you complete the stage. Completing a level in the fast time, and you'll earn a gold medal. Medal system is gold, silver, bronze. This adds replayability, as you'll need to repeat levels several times to get a perfect attempt to finally get that elusive gold medal. It's hard, but worth it. Ricky Tiki Taco, ball size doesn't really matter. Music in the game is simplistic like the game. It's just a repetitive melody. The music does change as you progress through the stages. The controls are fantastic. You can move the ball using the left analog stick and control the size using the right. There's normally no excuse if you fail a technique due to the simplistic and well-designed control scheme that IO has. With all the praise I've given IO, it does have some faults. The yellow movable blocks I mentioned earlier do at times feel to be a bit glitchy, and sometimes they move in absurd ways which can easily kill your run for that stage, forcing you to restart. Another problem is the lack of a timer. Many games utilize a medal system or ranking system based on how fast you complete a level. Some notable examples are Super Meat Boy and Plus in the Trial series. When you play those games and race through a level, you can see the timer clearly on screen, so if you make a mistake, you can look at the time and decide if you want to restart the level if you're having a bad run. In IO, that is not the case. There isn't an on-screen timer. To view the timer, you must first pause the game. So every time you try and speedrun the level and you make a minor mistake, you then have to pause to check if you're still on track for the gold medal. It's something that totally breaks immersion and frustrating to say the least. One final complaint is something that happened personally to me. After spending several hours getting approximately 45 gold medals, I backed out to the main menu, closed the game, and resumed the game next day, only to find out my save wiped.
Oh, no. No wonder he hasn't completed it.
I'm not sure if this is an isolated incident, but it was annoying to say the least. I did not run into that issue with that game, but I did run into it with a separate game, which I should be talking about later on this week, but I'm holding off until I hear if anyone else had it. Or if it was something on my end. I wonder if it was something to do with the Xbox Live issues that were going on recently.
I don't know.
Because I know if the game starts up and it's like, it's unable to find a save, do you want to play, just play offline? I've had games not save my progress like that. So, anyway, with that said, IO is truly a good game. Despite my complaints, it is enjoyable, and despite the setbacks, I'm looking forward to playing more of it. So I recommend you do it too. If you are still unsure and have a Windows phone or Windows 10 PC, you can easily purchase IO for a cheaper price. Approximately $3 to $5 launch sale on Windows Phone Windows 10 is also cross-buy. If you buy it for your phone, you'll get it on Windows 10 computer. And at the reduced price, it's definitely something to pick up if you're interested in the game or want a feel for the game without spending too much money. I'm pretty sure that it does not work from Windows Phone all the way to Xbox, though. I'm pretty sure they have completely separate achievement lists as well.
They are separate. I know that much.
Yeah, so there's no cross-buy for Xbox to Windows 10 phone or Windows Phone or stuff like that.
Yeah, I believe it's just cross-buy between Windows and Windows Phone.
Yep. Anyway, final game to talk about today, which, again, this is going significantly longer than I thought we'd go.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you have people hanging out in chat and we're talking.
Exactly. You could be a part of it, too, if you came to Beam.com.
Like Nightwolf, who just showed up and came in right when things were sounding oddly sexual with balls.
Yeah. Well, things are always oddly sexual on the show.
True. Very true. You haven't heard our early shows where we talked about fleshlights all the time.
I'm sure it was great.
Yeah, those old shows were crazy. Anyway, final game to talk about is called Robots in the Wild, developed and published by Heatbox Games. Released February 15th on Steam Early Access for $9.99, Robots in the Wild is a challenging puzzle strategy game about creatively dropping blocks to build robot fortresses, travel to distant planets, and construct huge interconnected robot strongholds to protect and rescue the hearts from the monsters of the wild. This is a really, really cool game. It is a mix of tower defense, Tetris, and Pipe Dream.
That's an interesting combination.
It is. The way it works is there is a heart in the middle of the stage, and there's some blocks that have dropped around it. It is up to you to build a fortress to protect the heart for X many of nights until a ship comes to pick you up and rescue you with the heart. There are different block combinations. There's cross shapes. There are L shapes. There are straight through. There are straight with a cap on it. The main thing that you've got to do is you need to place the pieces in proper order to construct different items. Like if you put the straight with the caps, if you put one with the opening up and then one with the opening down, that creates a lamp.
Oh, cool.
Or if you use an L shape and then put the caps at the top and then on the side, it forms a gun.
Makes sense.
Or if you create a figure eight shape, it creates a power generator, which you need the power generators to power up the lights or the guns or whatever else that you create over the stages. Of course, overnights there will be monsters attacking you, so you need to make sure that you have enough defenses up to save yourself.
Important.
Yeah, always good. I'm trying to pull up. I know because the game is still in early access, there is not as much content in the game as there is going to be in the end. I'm trying to pull it up so I could give the proper info here so I don't miss anything up. Which, by the way, this game was developed by Heatbox Games, but it's pretty much one dude.
Wow. Not bad.
And on top of that, all the sound effects are done by him because he is also a professional beatboxer.
That's pretty cool.
So the sound effects in the game are fucking cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Let me see here. Planning on adding co-op online battle systems. I thought he had something here saying what he planned to have eventually. Future goals. Here it is.
Yep.
Currently, there are 16 planets in the game. He aims to have 64. There are 10 robots to build in the game, like the gun, the lamp, that other stuff. He's planning to get it up to 32. There are also one boss in the game, and he's hoping to get that up to 4. So this has been something he's been working on for over 2 years now, basically doing like in between shows of his. And I am very, very excited to see how far this game goes. The visuals are amazing. The sound effects are fantastic. There's so much personality in a game where all the music is just the guy beatboxing.
Yeah, that's cool.
All the voices, all the sound effects is all just one dude's voice, and it's really, really cool. For $10, I think this is definitely something worth checking into now and being there for the full ride, especially, because it's early access, they plan on raising the price as more levels and more content and what else is added. So getting in at $10, I could see this one eventually landing at 20 when all cool. The content is there. Just the cool mix of Tetris with the Pipe Dreams influences, I really enjoy. Like, I don't think enough games out there riff on Pipe Dreams. So as it stands, for $10, I think it's a buy it. Get in now, enjoy the ride, and definitely listen to the guys beatboxing.
Yeah, I hope it's really good.
It's for sure. A really, really cool game. It's definitely one of the more unique games I've played on the show.
That's cool.
And
unique is always a nice feature.
And it can get difficult as well. Yeah, the different mechanics in the game with, dropping the pieces properly. If you run out of pieces, or if you're getting the wrong pieces, you can drop some, and then if you line a bunch up of the same in a row and highlight them, you can send them back into orbit pretty much to get fresh pieces. It's just a neat way to like clear out clutter you don't need, but still doing it in a strategic way.
That's cool.
So yeah, buy it. Good stuff.
I'm raising my thumb up, but you can't see it.
Oh, man, that is it for now. Be sure to stick around until after the music. We are going to have Eduardo Jimenez of Eclipse Games on to talk about Spheroids. We're going to listen to some music from the Spheroid soundtrack as well. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you for chatting with us in chat. If you're in chat now and you haven't bought the Humble Freedom Bundle, you still got about 15 hours, so go do that. And if you're listening to this MP3, you're too late, so thanks for nothing. All right, welcome back. Joining us at this time, it's been quite a while since you've been on our show, Eduardo Jimenez of Eclipse Games. Eduardo, how are you doing?
Hi, yo. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's good. I'm good. And I'm sorry if I sound a bit funny. I got a bit of a cold, but hopefully it'll be okay.
Oh, that's fine. If you have a coughing fit on the show, that'll be even better.
Okay.
So yeah, it's been quite a while since we've had you on the show. The last time that we had you on was back when we first kind of started doing the whole developer interview things, when you were on to talk about Super Toy Cars, which CJ, you said you're a fan of that, right?
Yeah, I loved that one.
Oh, thank you.
And
that was a lot of fun for me.
And now you are back because your game, your newest game, Spheroids, just released on Xbox One. And it was also available on Steam and PlayStation 4. And you are here to chat about that today.
Yeah, actually, it just released today. Today on Monday on Steam. And it's also available on Wii U and PS4 and PS Vita. And, of course, Xbox One and Windows 10. It's actually XPA, Xbox Play Anywhere. So if you buy it on Xbox One, you can play it on Windows 10, and you actually can carry around your save game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize it was an Xbox Play Anywhere title. That's really cool.
Yeah, actually, like, that kind of thing's allowed. It's like, why would you have to pay twice for the same game? I mean, really? I think it's just stupid to ask people to pay twice for the same game, even if it's different platforms. I understand you cannot do that with PlayStation and Xbox, but you know, between PlayStation 4 and Vita, or between Xbox One and Windows 10, well, why not?
Yeah, it just makes sense. So yeah. For the people who don't know what Spheroids is, give us the sales pitch. Tell us what the game is.
I usually sell it as Pang meets Mario, okay? And maybe that's a bit of a, you know, if you don't know Pang, everyone knows Mario, so that's the easy part. But if you don't know what Pang is, then it's a bit complicated. It's a platformer where you have combat parts that are where you fight balls that bounce around. And when you say it like that, it sounds a bit stupid. It actually is. That's part of the fun, I think. But yeah, at first it may sound a bit weird, but it's Pang is an old game from the arcades. I used to play it when I was a kid. It must be 25 to 30 years old, and you just had to burst balls. And when you hit the ball with something like a hook, and when you hit a ball with a hook, it splits in two until it's too small and it just bursts.
I know a lot of people. A lot of people might know it as Buster Brothers, because that's how I knew it when I was a kid.
Okay, sorry, probably that's how it was.
I'm guessing that was like the American title of it. Super Buster Brothers in arcades and Super Nintendo and stuff like that, but Pang pretty much everywhere else. And now I think they're starting to go with the Pang name in America now as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I just... It was Pang everywhere here in Spain, and you're right, Buster Brothers is probably in America.
So yeah, Pang Buster Brothers meets platforming, and I personally love this game. I've had so much fun with it. You were nice enough to let me check it out when it was still fairly early in development on PC. Back when I think I sent you a bug report in that the controller continually moved to the right.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't have support for Xbox One controllers at the time, I think. And you played it with an Xbox One. I was like, I don't know how you played it, actually. It's, I mean, when it's this bug, it's a bit hard. Well, it was, I mean, it's annoying to play like that. But yeah,
And I still had fun.
We fixed that, by the way.
Oh, that's good to know. That could have been hard mode. CJ, could you imagine playing the game where you were continually moving to the right?
Like, how strong is it? Like, is it... Like, if you move to the left on your controller, can you actually move to the left? Or
yes.
Is it like...
Yep, you would move to the left normally, but you would just always be moving to the right.
And was it, like, fast or just...
Just like, normal speed.
I mean, that would be really hard to control in some of those platforming sessions that sometimes frustrate me a bit.
And I still had fun playing it because it's, I don't know, it just, it's, I've always loved the Pang games, the Buster Brothers games, and I thought it was awesome to see that gameplay mixed with traditional platforming and to have, like, you know, a real story to it. It wasn't just levels of balls or balloons. You clear them all and then that's the end. Like, there's actual...
You're going to hate that I'm saying I've never played Pang or Buster Brothers or whatever.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
I mean, yeah.
It wasn't that big in America, I think. Was it?
I don't know. I know I played it in the arcade. There was a movie theater near me that had some arcade games, and that's where I first played it, when it was Buster Brothers.
In Spain, I mean, most bars had an arcade, and I think it would be fair to say that 1 in 10 at some point may have Pang. I mean, it was, like, really big. But I, for what I've seen, there's lots of people in the UK or the US that don't know the game at all, which is fine. So, I mean, they just... If you didn't see it, then how are you gonna know about it?
Yeah. Well, that's why you gotta explain what it is, and then when you realize what it is, you're like, oh, it's that game. Okay.
Yeah. You said that you enjoyed the story. That was weird. What do you think about the story?
I enjoyed the fact that there was a story. I like the fact that just this kid is so irritated and annoyed that he's the one who has to keep saving the world from these alien ball invasions. And I don't want to ruin the end of the story, but the when you find out why everything happened and just the fact that the kid's like, are you kidding me? Like, really? This is why I've had to go through all of this. I don't want to save the world. Can't someone else do it? It's not often that you see, you know, the hero of a story who treats it more of the, it's an inconvenience. Like, why do I have to do this?
I must admit that probably the story is not the strongest point of the game. I wrote it mostly and we brainstormed a lot, Tony and I. Tony is the designer and artist in the game, and I am the programmer and producer, and I wrote the story, but we brainstormed a lot, and we kind of like talk a lot about it. I just wrote the script, but we developed the story together, and we tried to take inspiration from movies from the 80s and a series from, sorry, movies like Back to the Future and what was it, the other one? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Maybe? Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And that sort of movies, and you know, try to get that sort of feeling of, you know, weird sci-fi, which is fun and funny, like comedy, and not taking yourself not so seriously, because really, you know, how are you going to take yourself seriously if your enemies are balls?
Yeah.
With a big eye and a smile. I mean,
happy balls.
Yeah. Some of them.
Yeah. I mean, a game like that doesn't really even need a story. It's just nice that you have something there to tie everything together and give it a narrative that you could follow through the whole story. I mean, it's not like it's an RPG that demands a huge, sprawling, epic narrative. You know, the gameplay speaks for itself, I think, and having the story link everything together just makes it even better. And it's an enjoyable, fun story.
Well, that's great. Thanks. Yeah. The thing is, when we develop games, we also think about the background of the game, even if we are not going to do anything with it, just because it helps you take decisions sometimes. So if you think, why is this happening? And you kind of give yourself a background story. Sometimes when you have to decide whether I'm going to do this or that, you just ask the story and it will answer itself.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I mean, I liked it. The only issue I had was that sometimes a couple of lines of text would just go so quickly.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have time to actually read what it said.
Yeah, my fault. I should have or either made the text go slower or add some kind of pause after the text that you have to skip. But I don't know. Since I had written it and read it thousands of times, I got so annoyed reading it that I probably thought it was too slow because, you know, the fifth time you read it, it's like, yeah, I know what it's saying.
I mean, most lines were perfectly fine. There was just a couple of odd lines that were like, okay, that went by a little too quickly.
You just got to learn to read quicker, it. CJ.
I think
the only issue I saw was on maybe one or two occasions, like one of the last words would be down below outside the text box.
Maybe I felt I had fixed those issues.
I only saw it maybe once or twice, but I know it popped up at least once.
Oh wow! I didn't actually notice that.
You're not very aware of things that happen, are you, CJ?
Or maybe you're just nitpicking. I just don't pay attention for that kind of small stuff. It doesn't bother me.
I really didn't enjoy the game. I had so much fun with it. I believe I was on trueachievements.com. I was like the 50th person to complete it. So it seems like there's a lot of people who aren't just buying the game, but they're completing it. They're getting all the achievements. They're doing everything the game has to offer. So I think that's definitely a good sign.
Yeah, Joe, I was one day after you and I was 106th to complete it.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And now there's 124 people that have done it.
Well, the game is out. It's been out since Friday, so it's not long since it's been out. I mean, well, I didn't know it had so many people that had finished the game because it's not the usual. I remember when I was working at BlackRock Studios, we did Pure, and I don't know if you remember the game.
Yeah.
Well, quad racing game.
I really, I love that game so much. I'm sad BlackRock is gone.
It was a nice place, and it was a really nice place to work because people there were really, there was a lot of talent and a lot of really smart people. Particularly, I dealt a lot with programmers and, you know, that part was really good. But you know, things, this kind of shit happens. I think that's what you say, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think I'm okay to say that in this podcast, right?
I mean, yeah, we'll let that one go.
Yeah. Just this once you're allowed to swear.
Normally we don't let that shit fly on our show. We have high fucking standards on our show, but you know.
No dicking around, please.
We don't fuck around on this show.
Okay. So I remember when we were at BlackRock that we got some sort of report from Pure. I don't know, like, let's say that we had a report from Xbox and there were like hundreds of thousands of players, and you could see how many people had finished the game. And it usually was around a 20%, between a 10 and a 25%. And you think, okay, so, and the thing is that even there was a 10 to 20% that didn't finish the tutorial or the first race, sorry.
Oh,
first
wow.
Race. And it was like, wow, finishing the first race is like so easy. And there is 10% of people that started the game or bought the game somehow and didn't finish. No, started the game because you had the tutorial and then you had the first race. And the tutorial was mandatory, so 100% of the people had to finish the tutorial. And then there was an 85 to 90% of people that finished the first race. And I think there was an achievement for that. And you knew because of that. And it was like, wow. So really, there was a very small amount of people that finishes games. So there's like this rule of thumb that you don't spend too many resources on your final stuff. Because only at 20% people, 25, 30, if you are lucky, are going to experience that. 70% people are going to fall in the process, you know, drop in the process, sorry.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm one of those people that never actually finished Pure. I did like half of it, though.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. There wasn't any final stuff anyway, but it was something that to take into consideration for future projects. But you know, it was a long game, and you had lots of events. And to be honest, I think I had to finish it like 8 times because I was working on AI and I freaking played every single level again and again. So I finished it. I mean, there is a level that I think I played like hundreds of times, literally. And the others, I had to play it quite a few times to make sure that the AI wasn't too stupid.
I couldn't imagine having to do that. Like, I like the game, but that's a lot of playing through it.
Well, testers do that for a living, and it's a hard job. Sometimes people think that testers are people playing games, like you do when you get home. And those guys are really not doing that. They're just going to a place in the game and trying to reproduce something and trying again and again and again and counting down how many times they get it out of and how many times not. And then writing a report and saying that, and then go again and do the same thing for the next bug and the next one and the next one. And that for 8 hours a day, if not 10 or 12, that's really annoying. And it really, it burns you with that game. Is that correct?
Yeah. That'd be correct.
So, I definitely wouldn't want to be a tester. Playing a game for fun is so different from playing a game as a job.
Yeah. I don't think I could ever imagine trying to be a tester on a game and doing QA and, because you have to spend how much time not just playing the stages, but like trying to break the game too.
Mm. And it doesn't matter. I was talking the other day with someone. I think with a split second, we have roughly, 30 testers in the US testing the game for, 3 months, 4 months. I don't remember really. And, how many hours they play the game. And some of them were like trying to get out of the tracks to see if they could get out of them and go into the rest of the scenery that was half empty. And, they found a few bugs and then we fixed them and it was, and we thought, and then after that, they tried for, a few times and probably what would be the equivalent to several hours or days to break it, and they didn't get it. And I think it was 2 days after the game was released, there was a video on YouTube of someone going out. It's like, what the fuck? I mean, how can someone get it in 2 days? I mean, they spent hours and hours trying to do it, and someone managed to do it, playing the game normally? How the fuck they do that? They managed to do it.
That's the beauty. You could have as many testers as you can possibly hire playing the game, 10, 12 hours a day, trying every scenario possible. And all it takes is a weekend with the general public, and they're going to find all the shit that you missed.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess when you're not looking for it, that's when you find it.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not futile. It really helps a lot. And now working without the net, I sometimes, I feel really ashamed when I get some bugs slip by, because sometimes there's some really awful bugs that slip by. And for instance, with Spheroids in the PS Vita version, there was a huge bug on a level that didn't allow the game to go on. I had to fix it in a patch, and I felt so ashamed that slipped by. But we don't have a budget for QA, and I play the game and play the game in one platform over and over, then another platform, and then when you got to the fourth, it's like, yeah, it's all the same, if it worked there and the other one and the other one, it probably works, right?
Good enough, fuck it, ship it, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Man, you talking about a split second though, man, I really, I miss that game.
That one was a lot of fun. I loved that. Although the rubber banding AI was frustrating. They were a little too rubber banding.
But yeah, that one, I took care of the AI there too. And at least at the end. And the problem is that that game, if you don't have adversaries around, opponents around, you bore, because what are you going to do with the power plays?
True.
So you need to have people in front of you to explode things and blow them up. And if you want to blow the shit out of people, they have to be close to you. So either you do a big rubber banding or you get bored. And we decided for the former.
But the achievements for getting first place in everything is so difficult when they just come out of nowhere. I'm in first place and now I'm in sixth. Where did they come from?
Yeah, the AI in that game could be pretty brutal, but holy shit, was that a fun game.
Yeah, it's a pity. It was a pity that game didn't get a sequel. I think we could have done a great job of doing a sequel with that one, but the problem was that the expectations were really high, and I don't think it met the expectations. I don't think I can speak a lot about it, because I probably is all under NDA, but I don't think anything I said would break it.
No. Really,
the game had its development problems like every other game, but in the end, I agree with you. It was a fun game, and I think it deserved an opportunity. There were a lot of issues. Like, it released 1 week before, 2 weeks before Red Dead Redemption. So, yeah. If you got a budget of 60 or 70 bucks for your gaming per month, you know Red Dead Redemption is going out. SplitSecond is going to take a second place, and you know it. And it's tough to compete with that. And, you know, we set up the release date months in advance, and then at some point you realize, oh, fuck, Red Dead Redemption is going out. But what are you going to do? Everything is set up for that date. You can't change it by then. I mean, not that I called the shots at the time. I was just a programmer. But the people that called the shots couldn't do anything. And it was fair, and it was just bad luck. And I think, Blur released very closely to, which
yeah,
was
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I was going to say, SplitSecond is showing as May 18th, 2010, and Blur was May 25th.
Yeah, so.
So that's
very similar styles of game.
Despite the fact that you guys released same day as Red Dead, I think the bigger issue that hurt SplitSecond was the fact that Blur released the next week, because I think it hurt both of those games. I think SplitSecond and Blur were both amazing racing experiences that needed to release like a month further apart, at least.
The thing is, Blur was, I think it was initially planned for February, when we said February or March, and then we said the May release date 2 months apart, and they had to delay it because they needed more time, and it ended up being, yes, 1 week apart, which, yeah, I agree, isn't good.
Yeah, it was such a bummer to see that happen, because I think that was, wasn't that the final release for BlackRock?
Yep.
And I believe Blur was the final release for Bizarre as well.
Yep.
So the fact that they released so close to each other basically killed each other's studios, which is a shame, because, such a bummer.
Particularly for racing game fans, arcade racing game fans, like I think both of you are and I am, it's annoying, because those were companies that did really good arcade racing games. And there are not that many out there that do that now, are there? Yeah.
No,
I think the closest is Forza Horizon.
Yeah.
And even that's a still, hard that, one there's a lot of sim there, but...
Yeah. You can just turn it into that if you want it, but I really liked Project Gotham Racing for Bizarre as well, which weren't really arcade, but they still, like, those were fun.
Yeah, Grid from Codemasters and Need for Speed are also very arcade. But it's just like, yeah, now we have Need for Speed and Grid whenever it's out. And Grid is quite, it's a bit sim, not too much, but it's a bit. and you know, but those like Blur and Split Second were more over the top, were more arcade.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the latest release I can think of on Xbox One was like Gas Guzzlers Extreme was very similar. In those terms. That it was completely arcade. You kill your opponents on the track to try to get ahead.
Yeah, and even Blur, Blur, I think, shared a lot with the Mario Kart games with the whole, high-speed racing with crazy power-ups and whatnot. But even still, Blur was still, more realistic. It wasn't a kart racer. It was a racing game with weapons. And, you don't see that anymore. And even, I loved how in Split Second, how you could just completely change the race with the power-ups there, where, you don't get a gun and shoot something. You blow up a fucking dam and change the entire course. Or you cause a plane to just crash onto a runway, and then you drive through the fucking plane. It was just the set pieces in Split Second were so impressive for the time, and I would love to see what BlackRock, if they were still around, could do this generation.
I'd love to see that too, and I agree with you. Like, it was the scale of things that happened in Split Second was crazy. Like the plane crashing down the whatever is the name of that, the runway, or the dam. There were other sets that didn't get released, but there were great ideas there too. I think I never forget the control tower falling down on the track. Those are really epic moments.
I really liked that. I think it was a boat that slid down the one.
Oh yeah, there was a boat on the stockyard. Is it called? And is that what it's called? Like being repaired, and you could blow it up and fall down on the track.
Yeah. That was so fun. And that one would always get at least like 3 or 4 people.
Yeah, because it was so big. And it opened other routes, and that was really cool, because then when you finished, then you had other options. Like it changed the routes, and you were the one doing it instead of, being some sort of predefined moment that happened always at the same time. It was like something that you did, and you changed the race. And
everything. Yeah, you didn't have to change it at all if you didn't want to.
Yeah, but yeah, that's not it doesn't look like it's gonna be happening anytime soon, right? With Disney pulling out of games,
That's such a shame that Disney just kind of gave up. They gave up on traditional game development to just go all in on Disney Infinity, and then they gave up on that as well. Like, what the hell? I don't know either.
I mean, I don't know. I suppose when you think about the kind of numbers that they must be moving, I suppose that the risk is really high, and they didn't think it was worth. I suppose. I don't know.
All I can do is hope that Activision and Disney both sign off on those games showing up for Xbox One backward compatibility program. I would love to see those two playable on Xbox One.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see Split Second as well, because Pure wasn't that also a Disney?
Yeah.
So I could definitely see Pure coming back with compatible, that Split Second could do it too.
I would hope so. Are you excited to see Pure playable on the Xbox One, since you worked on that?
I have really fond memories from the time of Pure. I had a lot of fun, and I learned a lot, and the mood in the team was really good. Sometimes when you get near the end of a project, things get tense because everyone is doing long hours, and the mood may get a bit sour. But
crunch time, right?
Yeah, and no, but in Pure there wasn't so much crunch time. They managed it really well, and people. Don't know why, but everyone was loving the game. Everyone was having fun developing it. And that changed a lot. And I really, I mean, even though I played it to death and I'm not going to be playing it again, honestly, I just played too much of that game because I was working on AI, so I am not really in the mood of playing it again. But I really have fond memories of Pure, and I really, if I see it again, it really brings me good memories. The mood wasn't so good on Split Second, but on Pure it was really good, and I was really happy to be part of that team.
Awesome. Yeah, I can imagine after all the time you spent in that game, you probably never want to play it again.
It's not the time I spend with the game, because when it depends on what you do. If what you're doing is something that doesn't really require you to play every part of the game over and over again, then probably you don't mind. But when you're on AI, on maybe some parts of the, or sometimes online, and some gameplay parts may need a lot of playing of the different levels too, you really end up playing the game, the entire game, several times over. Like, as I said, like 7 or 8 times in my case. And, you know, when you have finished the game 8 times, that's enough.
Yeah, I could definitely imagine that.
Oh man. So we should probably talk a bit more about spheroids again. I feel bad that you're on here to talk about spheroids and we're just talking about Split Second, Blur, and Pure.
At least he worked on those instead of, he's just like, oh, how was Star Wars The Force Unleashed? That was a good game. Yeah, but it's like,
But where did the idea for spheroids come from? Like, what made you decide after working on, you know, since you worked on Pure and Split Second, and then you worked on Super Toy Cars with, you know, Tachyon Project in the middle there. What made you decide to change things up so much and go with spheroids?
So the thing is, Spheroids was initially meant to be just a very small project that we were going to try at least to put it on the 3DS. The thing is, I think you say it like I'm a lecturer on a local university here. I think that's the correct way, right? And I teach a bit of game programming. And I use Game Maker for one of the subjects. To teach introduction to game programming, sort of. And one of the basically I teach is by getting some game and presenting it and saying we're gonna develop this little game, and we already provide the sprites and everything, and we just build it. I build it in class and they see how we do it, and then I ask them to do something at home. And, you know, building a game may take like 3 or 5 classes of 2 hours each. So, you know, one of the games is Pang. And because I don't know why, it was the first hour or two I spent it talking about the history of video games and video games that may be interesting for them to look at because they were different. And yeah, I thought that Pang would be a good game to teach them some things about physics and you know, movement and acceleration and stuff like that. And when I was developing it, I thought, well, it's actually a pretty cool mechanic. It's not too difficult to implement, and it's something that hasn't been done over and over again. So why not? Why not try this? And we started with that, and then Tony started thinking about how to improve it. How about we do bigger levels? Okay, but if we do bigger levels, we need to be able to jump and do some platforming. Oh, that's cool. Let's do platforming. And let's separate parts that where is they're more like platforming, and then parts where it's more combat, and you can, you know, enclose it and play more like Pang, and some others where you're just trying to navigate and you know, negotiate your environment. And then, well, that's cool. I think it's fun. But how about we try to do something to separate ourselves more from other platformers? How about we do a grappling hook or something? And then we prototype it, and it's like, well, the grappling hook is freaking hard to maneuver. How about we do it? How about we limit it, and we only allow you to be hooked at a certain points? And then all of a sudden it was a lot easier and a lot more fun to navigate the environment if you place the points correctly. And we went on and we decided to do something that changed the gravity. And again, that was a lot of fun because you could do things with the balls. Then we decided, okay, how about we do different kind of balls? Because in Pang or Buster Brothers, it was almost always the same ball. And we said, okay, how about we do balls that are heavier than normal? How about we do balls that have a shield and you can never kill them? And we can use them as sort of like dangers that you cannot kill. How about we go balls that have armor and balls that can rejoin after being split? That was really fun because I think that makes it a lot harder, but it forces you to think strategically on how are you going to destroy them, because you know that the moment you destroy a small one, that one is not going to be rejoining again, and then it adds a layer of strategy.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the fact of how like new balls and new mechanics were just sprinkled in regularly through the game, so it was always keeping it fresh. And it's like as soon as you were like, okay, well, I did enough of this. As soon as you were feeling that, it changed it up and had you do something different. I think it was a great progression in the game of how it just, you know, slowly introduced new concepts, new balls, new everything, and it just eased you in and kept things fresh the whole time.
Cool, thanks. It's great to hear that because, yeah, that was definitely the intention, but I wouldn't know if we really managed to do it or not. It sometimes felt like some parts were too long, but sometimes it felt like you didn't have enough time to explore all you could do with some things. But yeah, our idea was to try. We have 8 different levels in different places. That's actually a some sort of like a wink to the original Buster Brothers or Pang, because every level in Pang is a different country. So we decided to have different locations in the world and you visit those locations. And we thought that we should have either a new ball or a new mechanic in every world. And if possible, 2 of them.
Yeah.
So either a new enemy or a new mechanic or a new gameplay mechanic. And we actually I think we managed to get a new enemy and a new mechanic in most levels, in most worlds. Like in Russia, you got the moving platforms and the ice, and but I'm not sure if you got a new ball. I think not a new ball. Then in Egypt, you got like the background and foreground moving, and the shielded ball that cannot be killed. I don't know. We had like we tried to develop many ideas to try to keep it fresh, because I personally think that old games did it better than new ones. Old games kind of like threw a lot of ideas around and played with them a little bit and then just moved on to the next thing. And nowadays they like modern games usually explore an idea over and over, and sometimes it's great when they do that. Sometimes it's just that gameplay mechanic couldn't do anymore. I mean, it's like you're trying to stretch it too thin.
Yeah. One thing that I kind of wish there was more of, I know, I forget what country it was in, but there was the chase sequence of the...
Oh my god, I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, I was wondering why there was only like ever 2 moments in which you saw that giant purple ball.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping, because I enjoyed the chase sequence, and I was like, oh, are we going to get more of these through the game? And I was kind of disappointed that was the only one. Is that something that you planned to bring back and it just never happened, or what was up with that?
The idea was that was kind of like a boss, and initially we thought we may have like 3 or 4 bosses, but we didn't have time to develop them properly.
Mm.
It actually it delayed from our initial schedules quite a bit. And Tony thought about that. Actually, it was Tony who thought about it, and it was really cool. Like, he thought about the Indiana Jones scene where you are followed by a big boulder, big rounded boulder. Indiana Jones is being chased by a boulder. And he thought, oh, why don't we do that? And he developed that scene, and I agree with you. I think it's quite a lot of fun. It's a bit frustrating at first because you get killed cheaply a few times the first two or three times.
Especially because the ball spawns like almost right on you at the second you spawn, and if you don't know to run, you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was still. I mean, it was since death penalty is really that low, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, no, death. I loved that about this game, that it was like if you died, anything you killed still stayed dead, and you could just go back and keep working on it.
Yeah, it was very forgiving, which I enjoyed.
I think that's the only reason so many people are able to get through it is because of the fact that it's a casual game, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. We consciously decided to go that way. I'm not really a really good player. I mean, I like my games in normal or easy difficulties. Every now and then, maybe hard, but not for too long.
Yeah.
And I don't like to be frustrated repeating something over and over. And we consciously decided to go that way, to try to, okay, make it so that you can always go on. It's just a matter of you and eventually finishing things, like try again and again and try to make a punishment as small as possible. Like if it takes, like respawning would be really quick and, you know, you just lose 1, 2, 3 seconds, like Super Meat Boy, for instance. And we consciously decided to go that way. And some people don't like it, and I think they got a point, because at some point, like, difficulty is some sections are just a matter of time and throwing yourself there and trying to kill as many balls as possible before you die.
Yeah, there's definitely some moments like that that I was just like, I kept just going in like, all right, if I can kill just a few amount, then I can keep coming back and just keep trying to wear them down until eventually they're all gone.
Yeah, and
I didn't mind that.
That's something that we probably would change if we did it again, but it's you know, it's kind of one of those mistakes that you make. You consciously make it, and maybe we should have thought about it, but I think it's okay anyway. I mean, what do you say? Like, yeah, well, it's one of those things that probably you don't like a lot from the game, but on the other hand, you got the other part that is like you can casually stroll through the game.
Yeah, it's definitely more accessible to people that aren't as good at gaming. Like, people that aren't that good can still play this game and have a good time.
Yeah.
And not feel like they're just not good enough to do it.
Yeah, that's actually what I think that was the intention, and so I'm happy that it looks like we managed to get it.
How's the reception been so far?
It's been quite weird. It's been very polarized. Like, we have reviews that are sevens and mostly seven and a half over 10, some six. And then we have reviews of 2 and 3 over 10.
Really?
Yeah. So it was either you like it and it's a seven, or you don't like it and it's horrible.
I don't see why someone would give this like a 2 or a 3. I could see someone who's like, oh, I'm not really into this. I'll give it like a 5 or a 6 or something like that. But like, I don't see a reason. Like, even on just a technical level, I don't see any reason that this game would get something that low.
It's not like it's glitchy. I only ever had one problem, and that's, I'm not even sure if that was really the game's fault or the Xbox, but it like crashed at a moment in which there was a lot happening on the stream and its screen, and it started to get like pretty bad frame rate, and then it just crashed on me.
Yeah, I've never had that happen. So
I'm not sure if that was just like the Xbox.
Probably my fault. But yeah,
damn it, Eduardo, this is all your
fault. You take blame for everything, man. You have other developers, didn't you?
Programming, no.
Oh, okay.
I could blame Microsoft because, you know, it's easy. You blame him and you know, everything is Microsoft's fault.
God damn it, Bill Gates. This is your fault.
Yeah, fuck him. Man. He's just there in his mansion and with Bill his Ferraris. Spencer. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see why anyone would have a legitimate reason to give this game like a 2 out of 10.
Like, I mean, if it was consistently crashing over and over again and it didn't work and parts of the game were just broken, then I could understand that. But a 2 out of 10 should be reserved for the absolute most broken garbage.
Yeah, like just, I don't know.
This game is at least, I mean, if you even dislike it, it at least deserves like a 4 just for the amount of like good shit in it. Because it's still a solid game. It's not broken.
Yeah.
It works. Even if you don't like it, it still works.
Well, PS Vita has a 2 out of 10 review, and PS4 has 2 or 3 in Metacritic. 2, 3 out of 10, and 1, 4 out of 10. And as I say, I mean, and the thing is, you go to PS Vita, and then you have a 7.5 and a 7.
I don't know. Man, fuck really those weird. Guys.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a Wii U, the one that has a 2 out of 10, and he's like, "Why you got a 7.1, a 6, and a 2? What? I don't know. I mean, it's like, yeah, some people. I think there is a nostalgia factor here. If you ever played Pang, you cannot get the mechanics, you cannot get where this game is coming from, and you cannot enjoy it better. But if you never played Pang and you say, "Why? What the fuck? Why am I only able to shoot upwards or downwards? Why not shoot to the sides? That would be a lot easier, and I could kill easier."
Yeah, people, I was thinking that while playing the game, but I was like, "I'm still enjoying it."
Not the game that
you
can't like, shoot whatever. To the left and right because you don't do that in Pang games. That's
but
not.
But I see. The thing is, I've never played Pang. I still enjoyed it though. I was somebody that's like, even without the nostalgia factor, I still liked the game.
Yeah, that's cool.
And on Xbox.com, it's like out of 5, it has a 4.4. Like, that's a good really good rating.
Oh, that's cool. I hadn't seen that. I hadn't checked that yet. But that's great to hear. In the end, it's what's important is that people that buy it enjoy it. With Super Toy Cars, we have also low reviews in Metacritic.
What?
And, it's under 50. I mean, the average is under 50. Like, well, as far as score of 45 too. So, and if people enjoy the game, I'm okay with that. Honestly, I mean, we have a 3.5 stars. I mean, in the Xbox Store, and that's really what matters to me because,
those are the people that actually bought the game. They wanted to play it.
And if my critics don't like it, then we have to listen to them. I have to listen to them and you know, because they probably have a point in a lot of things. But if the people that bought it enjoy it, at least you've done something good. I mean, if they enjoy it and they paid for it and they enjoy it, well, that's something to be proud of, I think.
Yeah, I really liked that game. That was something that's like I was getting aggravated with it because there's moments like there is an achievement for getting first place in every single race in career mode.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a couple of rages. Oh my fucking gosh. There's a couple of races that it's like I was struggling with, but I still eventually I managed and I still enjoyed myself while doing it. I think that Super Toy Cars is I like Spheroids, but I think the Super Toy Cars still remains my favorite game you guys have done.
Yeah, cool, thanks. I have a soft spot for Super Toy Cars, and I think we have to do another racing game soon.
Oh, I would love that. I would definitely love to check that out.
I'll make sure that you guys get an early preview copy. And yeah, and definitely one when the game is out, whenever that is. That will probably be 2018. but definitely, in sometime in the near future, I'd like to send you a bill and you let me know what you think about this one. Because we're doing something, and it's just so early. I cannot say anything. It's really, really, really early. Like I don't know, a month in of a product that is gonna take a year and something to develop. But I think that you'll like it because if you like Super Toy Cars, we're gonna keep the handling. We're gonna probably change the gameplay a bit, but the handling is gonna be the same. And I think that a really important part of racing game is the handling. I mean, if you don't have fun driving your cars, then what the heck are you doing in a racing game?
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you can't control the car, then that game is not automatically not going to be fun, no matter how much creative activities actually in the game. Like, you could have Mario Kart, but if you couldn't turn, it would be awful.
Yep.
No. So something that, you know, speaking of super toy cars, something that has in common with Spheroids, at least in my eyes, is both games have fantastic soundtracks. I know with Super Toy Cars, it was all the Spinwires, which, by the way, thank you for turning me onto that band because they're awesome band. Who did the music for Spheroids? Because even the people I've talked to who were like, yeah, the game's not really for me, pretty much everyone agrees the music in Spheroids is amazing.
Well, actually, you have to thank the same guy. Well, the singer from the Spinwires is the guy that composed the music for Asteroids and Tekken Project. His name is Tyson Prince. I'll drop him an email so that he can check this podcast out, because I think he'll be pleased to hear you enjoy the music.
Is the soundtrack available anywhere? Because I would love to play some of the music on this show to go with this interview.
Definitely. I will check, and I will. I'll make sure that you get it. I don't know if tonight, but tomorrow morning. I mean, for me right now it's tonight. Probably for you guys it's this afternoon, but it's quite late for me. So if not tonight, tomorrow morning I'll make sure that you got it.
Sounds good.
And yeah, this guy is really nice. He's from Buffalo, so probably near where you live. And he's a really, really nice guy. He loves what he does. He loves music, and he actually loves games too. So it's a really fun guy and really easy to deal with. I'm really happy to meet him at some for Super Toy Cars, and I always check if he's interested in developing the music for our next game. If he says yes, I'm going with him. Nice. No questions asked.
Yeah. Another shout out to the Spinwires. Back when we did our SML 200 contest, they actually sent us a couple of download codes for their albums on Bandcamp to include in the giveaway package. So
that was really cool
of them.
Yeah, they're really cool guys. They're I don't know. I only deal with Tyson, but the other two look really fun and nice guys too.
Yeah, I'll have to check out Tachyon Project just to hear the music from that one. That's the only game I haven't played from you guys.
Well, let me know. I'll pass you a code if you want. The music, if you like sort of like 90s techno dance things,
yep.
Then yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
I'll have to go back and play Tachyon Project again. I think the only time I played Tachyon Project, I had, like, this was back when I think I had TV snapped or something, so I was just playing the game and then watching TV on the side as well, so I didn't pay attention to the music, so I'll have to go back and check out the music in Tachyon Project.
Yeah, I don't know the soundtrack is available somewhere. But the Esperance one is definitely. Actually, I found it. So it's here. It's in Bandcamp, and if you look for Esperance or Esperance original soundtrack, you'll find it.
Oh, fantastic!
Actually, yes, send it to you just in case you need it.
And I will include a link to that in the description as well, so people can hit up the link, and it is a name-your-own-price kind of deal, so if you are a cheap bastard, you can, you know, give them very little or nothing, or if you want to be cool about things, you know, throw them a few bucks. Throw them $5. It's 8 songs, so.
Yeah, I didn't know it was, name-your-price.
Yeah,
I thought it was actually free, but it's actually it's cool because I think there's no minimum. So probably if you pay zero, you still get it.
Yep.
I'm not sure. I actually got the soundtrack already.
Yeah, so you could be a cheap bastard and pay nothing, or you can throw them a few bucks for the awesome music. You know, whatever you want to do, listeners, whatever you want to do, whatever makes you happy in life.
Whatever makes you sleep at night.
If you can live your life knowing that you are giving these people nothing for their music, you know.
Well, I mean, they did buy the game. There's still something there.
Yeah, actually, I don't get a penny from that, and Tyson gets and that's, I mean, that's all Tyson's work, and I'm really adamant on people getting paid for their jobs and their work, particularly when they do a very good job, like it's the case of Tyson. So if he gets anything from Bandcamp, I'm pretty sure it's directly to Tyson, and probably he'll probably spend it getting something for the band or to compose music or something like that, because I mean, the little I know of him, he seems like crazy about these kind of things, and he also, and definitely he'll get a percentage of the benefits from Esperit. So if you like the music, you can know that at least a little bit of the money that you paid is going to the composer of the music.
That's awesome to hear. So yeah, I know we are getting close to about an hour here. I'm not sure if there's anything else you wanted to chat about today.
I don't know. It's really up to you. If there's anything you want to bring up, feel free to do it. I don't know really.
CJ, you got anything?
I can't think of anything besides hope. I just love your games. They're fun. I definitely think that Eclipse is a name that I will remember when it comes to games. Look forward to them in the future.
Cool, thanks. As I said, I really hope that I'm really interested in doing a good job of the next racing game, particularly from a racing point of view. So I'm going to be trying to contact some of you guys from the press, and I remember last time we spoke, it was Joe that told me about Forza Horizon 2, and I think that's a great game and it's a great reference. And people with good taste in racing games is definitely top of my list on people who are gonna receive preview copies. So at least I really would like to know your opinion, because it's so hard when you're working on something and you're spending your time all the time there. You kind of forget about. I mean, you don't see the issues there, even if they're obvious. You kind of like you don't see them. You can see the forest out of the trees. I think is that what you say, right?
Yeah, see the forest for the trees. Yeah,
I've never heard that saying before, but yes.
Really?
Yeah,
it's in a Marilyn Manson song. How have you?
Well, I mean, I've listened to a few, but it's obviously not that one.
It's in the Beautiful People. Can't see the forest through the trees.
That song. I just don't remember the line then, because I have heard that one.
I know in the UK they definitely use it a lot, and getting some fresh eyes and taking a look, particularly people that enjoy games and that love racing games. That's really great feedback, and I'm really, really keen on getting you guys to give it a go and let me know what you think, because I really want to nail it this time around I love to nail it, but I don't think we will get close to that, because we can only spend so much time polishing the handling, but I'd like to get as good as possible with it.
Well, if it's just as good as Super Toy Cars, then it'll be perfect in my eyes.
We have tried to evolve it and make it easier, more like Need for Speed, and like easier to decide when you start, not so unrealistic in the sense that you can drift around the whole track. That was a bit extreme, but it was fun. I think it was actually appropriate for Super Toy Cars.
Yeah, definitely in that game. It's like where everything was unrealistic, to be an unrealistic handling game was actually quite fun.
Yeah, but in this one we want to be a bit more realistic, so we are going towards the Need for Speed Burnout formula of having heavier cars and having to drift, and we try to make the drift fun, but make it also feel like you're really driving a car. That's what we're trying to go anyway. And I don't know, maybe I hope that you'll let us know whether we whether you like it or not.
I'll definitely be happy to tell you, and I'm guaranteed Joe will too.
Of course, we are always anything. Happy to check out whatever you've got for us any time. You know that.
Cool. I'll definitely keeps you guys in the loop.
And by the way, looking at the Final Boss website, I somehow completely missed the fact that you worked on the game Zenith.
Oh, I had a very small part there. Okay, I only did the porting to Xbox One and PS4.
I really enjoyed that game as well. I had no idea that you had a hand in that. So
actually, Lolo, the guy behind Final Boss, that's the guy that did the 3D parts in Super Troikas. That one did most of the art in Zenith. He's, I would say, the art director of the project.
See, you learn something new every day. I had no idea. And then I see it on the website. I'm like, oh my God, we covered that one, and I really enjoyed that game, and I had no idea.
So you like the game? That's great. Yeah.
I know that one. That's another one that was kind of hit or miss. I think Jim Sterling was incredibly harsh on the game, but
I remember you talking about
the humor was just right up my alley. It was just a parody and a send up of JRPGs, and I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it, as you say, it was a bit hit on me. It's either you loved it or you don't. And I actually am the main part that I didn't like from that game is I think the script was great, but the gameplay at times wasn't up to the script's level. And sometimes playing it was cool and was quite fun. And sometimes it was like, oh no, now the gameplay didn't. So the thing is that they had a really fun and funny script. And sometimes you're like, oh gosh, this part is not so much fun because I have to, you know, the combat is not so responsive as you would expect or something like that. But on the other hand, they had so many different levels and it was such a big world that it was fun to explore anyway.
Yeah. Well, hey, when Zenith 2 rolls around, that's where you tighten up everything and.
I'll let Christian know. That's Christian and Mark were the guys, the main guys behind it. Mark did the script and Christian was like the technical part, I think. I mostly dealt with Christian because obviously I was doing the ports and the programming part, so I had to deal with him mostly. And I'll let him know.
Well, I thank you for your service in that. But anyway, Eduardo, it was fantastic talking with you again. We will have to get you back on the show in the future when your next game is ready to go and ready for us to check out. Do you have any final words to end this episode?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you guys for having me again here. It's been a pleasure as last time. And I hope that, as I said before, what I really want is people, the players for it, to enjoy it. And if you enjoyed or you didn't and you want to drop us an email, please do so.